Now back to Cofield and Company for Monday Night Football at the Front Yard inside Ellis Island Casino on ESPN Las Vegas.
Here we go, 5 o'clock hour kickoff coming up in less than 10 minutes. Monday Night Football, Rams, Falcons, intimate crowd at the Mercedes Dome. Not a lot of people there right now, but you know, judging a few minutes before kickoff doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the turnout. But you mentioned an interesting thing about the Falcons. Kind of that same feeling as the Vikings. Like, I looked up and I'm like, wait, the Vikings have the same record as the Lions? What the hell happened? And the Falcons, actually, it feels like they've had a dreadful season. You've been calling for Raheem Morris to get fired for, like, a month and a half. I'm not saying this is, like, world-beater territory, but they actually, maybe they have a little motivation to be a spoiler. I don't know who they would be spoiling. I know this. Atlanta and their chief rival in the NFC South is New Orleans.
Yeah, and they
play
each other.
Those two cities, I don't know if the two cities hate each other. The fan bases hate each other.
Yeah.
But the Falcons actually have a chance to close out the season well.
Yeah, I mean, they have a chance to finish 8-9. And also, then that kind of just finishes my point off on what I've been saying for 6 weeks on Morris. Like, you finish 8-9, and you basically punted off the first 3 months of the season. So, like, again, I think they're going to lose tonight. I don't know what fashion it's going to look like. Rams are 7-point favorites. I don't know if the Rams are going to go, like, this is just one of those games where Stafford throws for 340 yards, four touchdowns. Nacua has 100 receiving yards. Stafford locks up the MVP despite Drake May's near-perfect performance against a high school defense, better known as the Jets at the moment. But look, Atlanta, if Atlanta wins tonight and wins next week against New Orleans, the Carolina Panthers, regardless of result on Saturday, are your NFC South champions. And talk about someone who might end up getting fired, and probably should with the way that things collapsed. Todd Bowles probably out if the Bucs don't win that division.
Don't
also.
Don't get Todd Bowles mad. He might really
all the curse words. All the curse words.
I like Todd Bowles.
He's a good guy.
He's put it on the players.
Yeah, he's a good
guy. I'm starting to think that there's an organizational decision that needs to be made with the Buccaneers. And when it comes to smaller quarterbacks, some can survive. Like, for the most part, one of the great small quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, and this is why he was great, was durable, Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield, it seems like as the seasons go along, his size works against him, and he is beat to you-know-what by the end of the year, and it's the same case this year. Maybe he's just too small to get through 17 games and be a guy who earns $35 to $50 million a year.
Well, it's funny, because the whole conversation of reckless play has all been around in the NFL this year about Dart. With all
Baker Mayfield can get reckless.
But he has been more reckless this year,
yep.
Especially really
taking on hits, yep.
Since the game against the Rams where he got hurt and the Bucs just got clocked, Baker's been a bottom five quarterback in the league for guys who are not total jabronis, because there's a lot of jabronis playing right now. But he is, I think you're onto something there. And also, too, I don't think it's a coincidence that that offense has gotten, forget the Mayfield injuries, that offense has gotten worse as the year's gone along, because they're on their third play caller in 3 years. And the two play callers they lost are Canales, who has turned Bryce Young from potential all-time bust to reasonable starting quarterback, and Liam Cohen, who has taken Trevor Lawrence from most inconsistent to people thinking Trevor Lawrence can't play to, oh, Trevor was actually really good now. And it's just hard when you lose two high-quality guys back-to-back years. That's the argument for Bowles staying around. Like, that is the argument, but that team has looked... I mean, they lost yesterday to Quinn Ewers by double digits yesterday. That can't happen. That can't happen.
I think the days of Baker Mayfield going number one, Bryce Young especially going number one, unless you're an unreal dynamic runner and that's going to be part of your game, I don't think first-round picks for quarterbacks are going to be guys who are 6 foot tall, 5'11". So, to the point, I swear I heard a former NFL quarterback say last week that he said for sure Diego Pavia would get drafted. And I almost drove off the road. I'm like, he is 5'9 and 7'8", and I bet you he's lying about that. He is 5'9 and 7'8", and he weighs 204 pounds. He ain't getting drafted. You think he's getting drafted?
I didn't even I didn't even think that he was even on the radar to even go like in round 5, 6, 7.
That's what this person said. He for sure is getting drafted. Now, here's the interesting thing. There's another court case where these JUCOs might.
Well, he might get another year.
He might get another year. Okay, so let's talk about smaller quarterbacks.
Yeah, please.
And, you know, I mentioned social media this weekend was buzzing with the Raiders are dirtbags. How could they fake this injury with Max Crosby? Max is pissed. He's leaving. Like, none of this is factually correct. It's not based in actually talking to anyone here. It's just wrong. But listen, on social media, you weaponize something. There's no face behind the report, so you can do whatever you want. You get a lot of comments. I thought what I'll say a collection of social media. I'm going to use your word. No, I'm not going to use your word. Social media ham and eggers.
Oh,
did to Anthony Calandria was ridiculous. Just giant graphics. Calandria picture. Liar! And this whole description about, he said he was staying, and he has turned his back. He's the face of these players today. It's all about money, and there's no loyalty, and he's going to the portal. Meanwhile, I'm like, I've been around the kid. I could see why he said he was going to stay. It was good times. It's before the bowl game. Everyone's feeling good. There's a brotherhood. By the way, to my knowledge, he just recently switched to this new agency group. Those are the guys who came out and said, he's going to the portal. Now, Calandria and his family could reverse course and go, you know what? We said it. We love Dan Mullen. This is the best spot. They're not going to say this. We're going to turn down a 75% raise for this kid who probably is not going to make it in the NFL at 6 foot and 197, whatever he is. He's listed at 205. I think he's thinner than that. Yeah, we're going to turn down a quadruple or, you know, five-time quintuple raise on what UNLV can give him and not go back to Power Four. I think that's lunacy. This is his chance to make money. Now, there's another part of me that's like, hey, maybe social media has it right. Maybe I'm supposed to come on the air and say Calandria is a scumbag and he's disloyal and he burned Vegas. I hate this kid. But I'm not going to do it because I know that's not the case, because I know if I were in the position, I mean, now I'm a wise old man. I would never say I'm staying. But guess what? A wise old man about 25 years ago did the same thing. Nick Saban was a jackass and said he was staying with the Dolphins, right? And then he went to Alabama. Sometimes you get caught in situations. You say something you're not supposed to say. Or I really believe Calandria at the time felt that way, that he wanted to stay around Dan Mullen. He really likes it. They probably discussed a figure for NIL, and it seemed pretty good. And then these agents were like, wait a second, family and Anthony, like, come on. The kind of money you're going to get on the open market, you got to consider it.
Well, and also, too, just because you go in the portal, it doesn't mean you're not going to come back also. I think that's another fact that people are missing.
Never now, over until it's over.
It's never over. It's never over at this point in college athletics.
I will say sometimes it's over because you don't get the interest you thought you were going to get.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
former UNLV quarterback Matt Sluka never really got the delivery on the supposed value an agent told him of $300,000. I don't think he got freaking $25,000 from James Madison. That didn't play.
Right.
Outside of the first four games. But all that said, I think Calandria is going to be coveted. The transfer portal quarterback market has been filling up. Some of the best group of five quarterbacks are in. Adam Hill from Cofield & Company and the RJ said he thinks Calandria is a top five portal quarterback. He thinks he may be the number two. I'm not going that far, but a lot of it's in the eye of the beholder. And who's spending the money? And he does have a lot of attractive things about him. Like, one, he's not developmental anymore. He just spent a year with quarterback guru Dan Mullen and really remedied a lot of the wrongs he had. He was a reckless guy. He admitted it. Mullen said it. He played playground football when he was at Virginia. He threw into a lot of mistakes instead of being patient and taking easy passes. He, until that final game, he wasn't loose with the ball at all in terms of fumbling. He showed he can... Man, if you want to run a versatile offense and get the quarterback on the edge, pretty good RPO guy, and he's a lot faster than people think. But number two in the portal, some of the guys who are in right now are Sam Levitt from Arizona State, Drew Mestemaker from North Texas, Byron Brown from South Florida, Brendan Sorsby, Cincinnati, Dylan Raiola, who at one point was the number one quarterback recruit in the country coming out of high school. He's leaving Nebraska. Josh Hoover, DJ Lagway is – I mean, that's –
Well, Lagway.
He's not developmental, but the upside on him is tremendous. Rocco Becht.
He's going to Penn State.
You would think going to Penn State. Yeah. Kenny Minchie is the backup in Notre Dame, or at Notre Dame. Aiden Childs is listed on this list as number 10. I think Calandria is better than about three or four of these guys, but I don't know about number two in the country.
Well, the other interesting thing, too, is what if Trinidad Chambliss gets another year of eligibility? He's also then going to be in the portal more likely than not.
List also might be.
Yeah.
We might want to update it with, like, Mestemaker would make sense to go to Okie State, where his coach left UNT to go to Okie State.
And then, like, Barnett's in the portal now.
James Madison, quarterback. Yeah, he's interesting.
He's an interesting piece. I don't know how he translates up to a power.
There's other power four backups like Minchie who are in.
And Jackson Arnold's in there, who people love his potential, even though I don't think he's that good. Pervula's in there again, even though he's probably going to Virginia Tech, back to James Franklin. There's also guys at the, like, even like FCS, like the kid from Harvard is a guy that a lot of people like, Jaden Craig. He could be Stanford's quarterback next year, and we could look up and be like, whoa, how did Stanford go 7-5 after being a doldrum? It's because of that. That's the one thing with the portal. There are so many unknown natures of how these guys are going to fit in these next spots. And then you got a lotto ticket like Lagway, like you just said, who is, got all this talent who just didn't put it together at Florida. Calandria is going to land in a good spot. Like, Florida State needs a quarterback. Like, SEC schools need a quarterback. And also, I didn't even mention what happens if Bryce Underwood goes in the portal. Like, I mean, there are so many.
Might block Trinidad Chambliss from going to LSU.
Exactly. So that there are just so many moving parts, so many moving pieces. I mean, the kid from Utah, whose name is escaping me right now, the freshman could also end up in
Bird Ficklin.
Yeah, so
I would be all over.
You love that guy.
Well, because I love RPO quarterbacks. I think the hardest thing to guard in all of college football is a guy who can threaten the edge, take it, or just stop on a dime and then throw a pass to a wide open receiver because everyone got sucked in by the run.
Well,
his debut was awesome. He didn't throw a lot, but he rushed for 500 yards.
I will say, I think Levitt is going to be Levitt's the best guy on the portal. Personally,
as of now, there could be some surprises.
Look, if Underwood ends up on the portal, he's clearly number one. There's no argument whatsoever, just because of the potential and that he's so young. But Levitt, to me, is the best guy in the portal because you're going to get him for 2 years, and then you have the argument on Lagway. But and we didn't even mention Rayola's in there too, who is the guy who's got monster potential. Even though I think Rayola's going to end up either at Louisville or Oregon, based off all the reporting so far. It's just so crazy. Like, just every, like, it's a year-to-year deal, period, at this point.
And for that reason, and I know college football fans will hate me saying this, college football is better than the NFL. Because you can dream a dream every year. If you want to pony up and either pay the money or nail the transfer quarterback the right way with your personnel judgment, you can be a winning program. The NFL, the Jets, the Raiders, the Browns. I mean, name the organizations that don't have a quarterback and haven't had one forever. You might be able to go to free agents and get one. These guys almost never move. You either get a quarterback in the draft or you're effed for a long time. Indiana sucked.
The worst program in history.
They were terrible. They just nailed it with two transfer quarterbacks. Maybe they'll get a third. I don't know. Maybe they'll develop. Maybe the Mendoza brother is going to be. I mean, a lot of people like him. But it changes everything. It gives hope to everyone. We don't have that hope in the NFL unless you freaking tank, which let me get back to.
Or you get lucky in the draft. You hit the right guy. Like, that's what that's the other thing. That's the other thing with the tanking discussion that aggravates me, Cofield.
Yep.
Like, I don't care that you get the first pick. You have to get the pick correct.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, like, you can get, and this is why the whole tanking discussion to me is nonsense. Because we don't know. We have no clue if the Raiders end up with the first pick and take Fernando Mendoza, we could love it at the time, but he could end up being bad. Like, Dante Moore could end up being better than Fernando Mendoza, and the Raiders pick the wrong guy, or vice versa, whatever it ends up being. We don't know. That's why this tanking discussion is nonsense for the most part.
Well, let me spray gas all over the Parles fire.
Please.
New York writer, longtime New York writer, veteran.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing, I think. Let's call it Tankgate.
Please.
Roger Goodell is always preaching about the integrity of the game and protecting the shield. The NFL needs to look into the Raiders putting three of their best players in IR in the days before, apparently, well, whatever. They could do all they could to tank against the Giants, to secure the number one pick, to draft Fernando Mendoza without having to trade up. Evidence! The snap count of Max Crosby, Brock Bowers, and Jeremy Chinn in the previous week's game against Houston. Raiders played well. Crosby 100%. Bowers 98%. Chinn 100%. They were all playing with injuries. Every player does. Did theirs become season-ending on the flight after the game back to Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
Then he throws in this one, which actually this one is interesting. By the way, that's Gary Myers, who's he's been working in New York forever and an author. Come on. When you get wrapped up with your allegiance to a city and maybe a franchise like the Giants, this is the kind of embarrassing stuff you're going to put out. Roger Goodell's not going to investigate. It's not Tankgate. You have no idea how serious – well, we do know how serious the injury was to Bowers and Crosby.
Yeah.
But he follows up by saying basically this would be a good chance for Goodell to stick it to Tom Brady again. Goodell spent $5 million on his silly – I love this. Has he written a book about the Patriots too?
I think he has, actually.
Okay. Goodell spent $5 million on his silly Tom Brady Deflategate investigation. Isn't Tankgate at least worth a couple of bucks? Wouldn't he love to investigate a team partially owned by Brady? Maybe he would. But we would call him on the carpet. That would be ridiculous because you could have investigated multiple teams over the years for laying down and making their best effort to not win games organizationally. I want to scream like I think the guy's name was Chris Crocker with, leave Brittany alone. Leave the Raiders alone. And I'll tell you what, I don't matter, but I will scream bloody murder. If there's an investigation, this is another blight on the record of the NFL and specifically Roger Goodell and Tags and Pete Rozelle in their anti-Davis family approach. This would be absolute bullcrap if they investigated the Raiders.
There won't be one. There won't be one. This is, again, this is just a lot of noise over complete nonsense for things that have happened throughout the years. And again, like Brock Bowers has been at 65-70% the whole season.
He missed a good portion of the season. Yeah, he probably should have not come back.
He probably should have sat out
longer. Risking his future.
Yeah, like with the Bowers part is nonsense. The Crosby thing, like legitimately, based off what the Raiders said, needs knee surgery. And really, we're this is not to disrespect Jeremy Chinn, but come on, like we're using that as evidence.
They're grasping at straws.
Like this is nonsense.
This is people. What happens a lot of times, the traditional media is still much better than what goes on social media, which is out of freaking control. I saw something the other day with a full-throated Max Crosby apology for what he did on Friday. I'm like, did he apologize? I didn't see it anywhere else. I'm like, are you just making this up?
Probably.
There's made-up names as sources. But reality is sometimes folks get too close to the people they talk to. They're fed stuff, and they don't even realize they're being suckered into being used as mouthpieces. And I feel like some of the New York media, with this anti-Raider, pro-Giant approach, it's silly. You're embarrassing yourself.
Well, again, all you had to do.
And by the way, if anyone wanted to come back and be like, you guys are pro-Raiders. Pro-Raider? I mean, I want to see them do well. We paid, over $1 billion for the stadium and the roads. We're going to be paying for this for a long time. The stadium apparently is doing pretty well, but I'm a Jets fan, okay? So I know misery. I want to see the Raiders do okay, but I'm going to sound like an ass, but, like, I will stand on a pedestal and call out injustice. And this would be nonsense. And I really do believe that MD has been screwed over many times over the years. And the great thing is, I think the NFL thought it was really jobbing the Davis family by denying them L.A. And in the end, it has worked out brilliantly. Because, actually, Mark Davis has outmaneuvered a lot of supposedly really smart owners in growing the value of his franchise, and the Aces purchase is one of the best purchases in the history of sports.
Well, I mean, yeah.
So good for Mark Davis. And screw these haters around the league, carpetbagger. They don't deserve to be in the NFL. Davis and his son, Mark Davis, have done a lot for the NFL. They deserve to be here. The Raiders are still a good brand in spite of struggling the last 20 years.
Get the draft pick right. That's all I'll say. Get the draft pick right. It doesn't matter who the pick is. If it's Mendoza or it's Moore, just hope whoever it is right. And that can change the whole narrative. Also, too, the amount of – and the funny part of this is, like, The Giants have the quarterback in place, too. Like, even though we had the discussion earlier, like, oh, they consider Mendoza more or whatever. Like, they're more likely than not taking a quarterback if they're picking number one. So, I don't know. And they're probably, who knows. There's always some angle from the Giants people. They were, where it's some way to screw the Jets anyway, Cofield. I don't know how they managed, haven't managed to do that after the Jets put together probably the most embarrassing performance they did all year yesterday, which
Lordy.
Is which is saying something.
Wow.
They're saying something.
Okay, another story I saw over the weekend where I was like, I don't know. I'm gonna pump the brake on this one. Pump. I guess I have multiple brakes. The brakes. College football, and a lot of it's the jockocracy. It's the former players. The 100% confidence in saying Michigan. I saw someone write Michigan pulled off a Christmas miracle in getting Kyle Whittingham. I want to talk to someone in Utah who knows both sides of the story. What happened?
Damn.
We all just got to walk away from this and go, well, things happened. Kyle Whittingham didn't want to leave. He was forced out. There's two sides to the story, so we'll get a better look at the story as the Las Vegas Bowl has Utah and now Morgan Scali featured against Nebraska coming up. 12:30 kickoff. You can get your tickets at lvbowl.com as one of the fellas, Steve Bartle, who's an insider for KSL in Salt Lake, is up next.
15 seconds
to air.
Stand by, all cameras.
Ready with slow motion and isolated cameras. In less than 5, 3, 2, 1.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas.
Yeah, I love the old school 70s Monday Night Football music. It actually goes well with what I just said before the break about the jockocracy, right? Former athletes who spew stuff without doing much research. That was a Howard Cosell phrase that he coined in the 70s. Long story short, I saw a bunch of former players saying, man, Kyle Whittingham to Michigan, Christmas miracle. And I've been thinking for the last couple weeks, I'm like, something happened at Utah, and I don't think we're getting both sides of the story. And one of the guys who really got me thinking was Steve Bartle, who works for KSL. We pulled video and audio from him a couple weeks ago when it first heated up and we found out Whittingham was Dunsky, and this is going to be his final game, not anymore. Steve was saying, hey, this is not necessarily retirement. Steve's up with us here with Cofield and Jeff Parle. Sorry for the long lead-in. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Just driving into Las Vegas about an hour out. So,
all right.
About to invade Vegas, man. I'm looking forward to it.
What do you think the fan turnout is going to be here for Ute fans? They're going to come out in thousands, or is it going to be kind of a tepid turnout?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually pretty interested to see what the turnout is going to be. You know, I know a lot of people that are going to be going, and so, you know, it may not be the same sort of turnout that we saw a couple years ago for the Pac-12 championship games, you know, there that Utah, you know, won and in 2021 and 2022, but I think there will be a decent turnout. I think there will be a good contingent of Utah fans. You know, this is an interesting game, obviously, with it being on New Year's Eve, but I do think there will be a good number of Utah fans down here.
Okay, take us behind the scenes. Why is Whittingham gone, and now he's popped up at Michigan? He didn't want to go, so let's go back to, I don't know, we have to go back to, like, 2019, or at least back to the beginning of this season. What exactly happened? Why did Utah want to move on so badly?
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting time, and obviously this month it's kind of come to a head. And, you know, to really tell the story correctly, you know, you do have to go back to 2018 and 2019. You know, Kyle Whittingham said, put it out there, that he did not want to coach past 65, and he is now 66. He, you know, sometime later after he said those words, he handpicked his successor in Morgan Scali, officially giving him the head coach and waiting tag in 2019. And so, you know, it's been 6 years since Morgan Scali was given that tag. And obviously between that time and now, you know, he's had to be that tag had to be reassigned to him, you know, after an investigation into things. But he has long been considered the successor to Kyle Whittingham. And so, you know, you get to the last couple of years. And, you know, going back to last season, many viewed 2024 as the year that Kyle Whittingham was going to hang it up. He had a team going into that season with Cam Rising and Brant Keithy and a number of just a veteran group that he and the program felt like they were going to be very competitive. The sort of team that, you know, you can feel comfortable kind of sailing off into the sunset. Obviously, the season got underway, and Cam Rising was lost in game three of the season to a finger injury that ultimately cost him, you know, the rest of the year. And Utah struggled, finished the year 5-7, had a seven-game losing streak. And, you know, come the end of the season, the big question was, is Kyle going to go out on this note? And he admitted that, you know, he was considering retirement, but couldn't go out on a 5-7 record. He felt he had to come back this season to right the ship. And so this year is all about getting Utah back on the right trajectory. And, you know, they got underway, had a great success. They lost a couple games to Tech and BYU, but finished the year 10-2. And, you know, you can go back to the final game of the season. It was a Black Friday game the day after Thanksgiving out in Kansas. And Kyle Whittingham's entire family made the trip out there. And obviously, you know, it being Thanksgiving, that probably played a role too. But it was rare to see the Whittinghams in full force on the road at any point in the time that I've been covering. So to see the entire group out in Kansas, that all sort of led to the feeling that, again, this was the final year for Kyle Whittingham. But the season ends, and the last couple of weeks, Kyle Whittingham's began to waffle on that decision, going back and forth, whether he wanted to come back. And ultimately, he had to give a written notification to the University of Utah on December 5th, whether he was going to retire or whether he wanted to continue coaching. And based on what I've heard from sources, Whittingham gave his notification that he wanted to continue coaching. But Morgan Scali has – everything that Utah has done has been to get Morgan Scali in place as the head coach of the University of Utah football program to lead them into the next era, right? As we're seeing this evolution of college football and college athletics, many in the program, many supporters of the program feel Morgan Scali is the guy to lead Utah into this new NIL era, right? Kyle Whittingham accomplished a great deal of things. He is a guy that transformed the University of Utah in many ways with the success. He is a CEO in many ways. And a CEO at Utah is just not going to work the way that Kyle Whittingham went about it. Just delegating a lot of responsibilities. Utah needs somebody that is more hands-on, more involved, and that is Morgan Scali. So, you know, this kind of culminated into a situation that, you know, Kyle being as stubborn as he is and Utah wanting to transition to Scali, you know, ultimately it came down to Whittingham accepting, you know, the reality of what was going on. And he decided to step down. If he wanted to come back, he could have come back. But he decided to step down. He understood that, you know, this is what everybody wanted. And Morgan Scali was named the head coach a day later. So it's been kind of a perfect storm where Whittingham makes that decision to step down. And a couple days later, one of the best programs, one of the best jobs in the country in college football, suddenly opens up out of nowhere with Michigan and the scandal of Sharon Moore and what happened there. And immediately, as soon as that happened, I was told that Kyle was going to make a run at that job. And, you know, considering his age, many thought that maybe it wasn't a great fit, that Michigan wasn't going to be that interested. But given the fact that Michigan has been a program and a university that has kind of dealt with a lot of issues the last 5 years or so, and, you know, with the Moore scandal specifically, Whittingham, in so many ways, is the perfect candidate to kind of fill in, step in at Michigan, and lead them into the next 5 years. So I think it says a lot that he got a five-year deal, that Michigan was willing to give him that, and that Kyle was willing to accept that. that speaks to the fire that he still has to continue coaching. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how things change with him going to Ann Arbor. But that is the gist, I guess you could say, of what's transpired at Utah this month and what sort of led to this whole situation being what it is.
Utah's playing in the Las Vegas Bowl against Nebraska Wednesday, 12:30 kickoff. You can get your tickets at lvbowl.com. Steve Bartle covers the Utah football program for KSL. So there's nothing you saw in terms of flip-flop nature, anything else in dealing with the administration, any other stories you heard that would suggest to you that Kyle Whittingham may not be a great hire for Michigan?
You know, it's going to be interesting with Kyle because, you know, he is at an age where he is sort of set in his ways, and he's had the luxury of kind of dictating his terms at Utah the last handful of years, you know, when it comes to media access and practice access and, you know, how he's operated. I'm fascinated and really going to be paying close attention to what his program and how it sort of operates at Michigan, because Michigan isn't going to necessarily put up with the things that Kyle was able to get away with at Utah in terms of the media access and all of that sort of thing. So, you know, I do genuinely believe that Kyle is a great coach. I think he is going to be the guy. I think he is a guy that can lead Michigan to a great deal of success. I'm not sure he has the ceiling that maybe Michigan fans hope to see in terms of, you know, having national championship aspirations and that being the standard. You could hear it in his press conference where he sort of acknowledged, you know, that their expectation is getting to the playoff. That's not entirely true. They want to win championships, and so there's going to be sort of a transition period for Kyle. But I like I said, I'm going to be very interested to see how he handles it out there in Ann Arbor.
Steve, do you think there's any worry at all around Utah that with they must have known this private equity deal was coming a while back, that maybe Whittingham, so set in his ways, would be unwilling to work well with private equity? Because, you know, the word is, hey, you're going to have to cede some power to these people who are going to be looking to make money. You can't – college football with private equity, you can't spend like pigs. You're going to have to be under control to a certain extent. And for old coaches, I'm sure they'd be like, wait, who's telling me to do what?
Yeah, I think there's a big misunderstanding of what the PE deal is and what it is actually going – how it's going to actually operate. Utah has set up an LLC where, you know, the private equity is going to – that is what the private equity is investing into. It is – Utah has not conceded control in terms of operation, decision-making, that sort of thing. Obviously, that's the plan right now, and that's what it's supposed to be. Certainly with private equity, when you – invest the amount of money that is being invested, that can change, right? Things can change. And I don't necessarily think there's a great deal of concern at this point. I believe that, you know, things are going to be finalized, or we get some greater detail into what this private equity deal is actually going to look like within the next couple of months. I would anticipate it being wrapped up and finalized next month even. And from there, we'll get a better idea of what this, you know, the terms and how much money is actually being invested. But in terms of how it's going to influence how Utah football operates, I don't think that the private equity Otro Capital is going to have a great deal of influence in that, at least to start. Now, maybe again, when you're talking about the money being invested that is likely going to be invested, that can change. But as it's set up right now, you know, that group is going to come in and they're going to actually, you know, help Utah generate a lot of third-party NIL deals. They're going to look for corporate sponsors and that sort of thing. I'm fascinated to learn what this deal is going to look like in terms of the fine details. But this is definitely a unique thing, and I think something that you're going to see more of throughout college football. But I don't think there was concern in terms of it influencing or being influenced by Kyle Whittingham or influencing him or his inability to handle it. I don't think that was much of a consideration here at all.
Steve, great job. Be safe driving down here. Have a good time when you're in Vegas. And I got to say, enjoy what you guys are doing. Got to get you on again. And, boy, you guys are killing it on social media. Very good job there as well. So everyone needs to check out KSL Sports up on socials. Thank you so much.
Hey, appreciate you having me on and looking forward to joining you again sometime down the road.
There you go. I love talking Utah sports. I don't like the state of Utah, but I like talking Utah sports. But I also, well, I love the, this is tremendous, right? Like, who's wealthier? The $500 million that's coming in for PE at Utah or the Mormon Church? Mormon Church.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this just ups the ante. Like, yeah. Now I'm sure Utah's like, okay, well, now we got money. Now we got money. Well, maybe we're going to get the A.J. DeBonses of the world.
Oh, actually, hold on. It's the crumble cookie money, isn't it?
Not a lot of it.
Yeah, for BYU.
Seems like, yeah, they already kind of had a version of PE making decisions.
Yeah. Well, hey, look.
Flexing muscle.
By the way, Cofield, I don't know if you just did the move off of Utah, go to BYU for a second. Did you happen to watch any of the Pop-Tarts Bowl on Saturday?
A little bit.
I have a newfound respect for Sataki. The way that he just devoured every single Pop-Tart related thing came his way.
He's a voracious eater.
Was truly, truly spectacular, and it honestly warmed my heart, in all honesty, watching it.
Embrace, you always, as a coach, you always got to be looking ahead to the next sponsorship deal. Now, I don't know if, like, I mean, well, I feel like Crumble Cookie is sort of a competitor. It's kind of snacky.
Somewhat.
I'm not going to say which one I prefer, but maybe I need to make a pitch to one of them. But I think that whole game is one of the most brilliant examples of why bowl games work and the kind of impact advertising is going to have.
Yeah.
I read the number from last year that the week after that game, Pop-Tarts had sold like something to the tune of like 22 million more Pop-Tarts that the week after the game than the week before.
If my wife,
such publicity.
If my wife would not be extremely upset that I brought Pop-Tarts into the house because there is no self-control, not from me. We'll just leave it at that.
I have this conversation, too. Don't bring that stuff in.
Because, I am a big fan of the s'mores and the chocolate chip. Big fan of those. But it ended up on my shopping list this week, and I mean, mostly because of the game.
As much as I get on BYU, I'm always a fan of you know, guys like Kalani Sataki. No, I was going to call him Squatty. Believe me, he's not 5'6". So
no,
he's a former player. He's a big guy.
A big
but
guy.
he wears it well. And if you're down in the snacks left and right, that's good for the school, good for the sponsor of the bowl game as well. Coming up, we'll get into the grab bag, some more thoughts on what's going on in the NFL heading to Week 18. And right now the Falcons lead the Rams 7-0. 3 minutes left in the first.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Heading into the bag here on a Monday, live at Ellis Island Front Yard. Cofield and Company wrapping things up. It's the final Monday of the year. How about that? How about that? Made it through 2025. Heading into 2026. But we go into the bag first. I want to go to what we saw yesterday in the afternoon slate. Of course, we already talked about the Raiders losing to the Giants. But Buffalo and Philadelphia played one of the stranger football games of the entire season, where the Eagles really just pummeled Buffalo for the first 35 minutes of the game. You could even argue at the first 40 of the game. And then Philadelphia's offense did their nonsense that we've seen them do in the second half, where they just don't show up and the play calling becomes bad. The offensive line falls apart. Jalen Hurts did not complete a pass in the second half. Second time this year Philadelphia's won a game where Hurts hasn't completed a pass in the second half, which is just unbelievable. Eagles win 13-12. But I think there needs to be a bigger conversation had about what the Bills are, not just this year, but moving forward, where I don't think that team is really well put together at all. Josh Allen is an unbelievable player. I don't think he's as good as everyone thinks he is, but he is one of the four best quarterbacks in the league. But that team, if it wasn't for Allen, would not even be a playoff team this year. And I know it may seem sound crazy about a team that's 12-5, assuming they beat the Jets, who are equivalent of a freshman team at the moment. But the Bills don't win the East for the first time since 2019. New England seems to be on the up and up, where Drake May is awesome. Mike Vrabel's a top six head coach in this league. Patriots are only going to get better as the years go along. And we talk about missing the window all the time. But the Bills, I think if they don't find a way to win it this year, and I don't think they're going to, because their most likely round one matchup, assuming the Chargers get clocked by the Broncos and then the Bills beat the Jets, will be the sixth seed. And likely go to Jacksonville. I don't think they're beating Jacksonville. I don't think Jacksonville will turn Allen over. A lot of questions this offseason for them. They're not the only ones, though. Back in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers lost to Quinn Ewers yesterday. And now, by the way, with the results so far in Atlanta, Falcons up 7-0 after one against the Rams. Rams look completely disheveled to begin this game. Tampa might not even control their own destiny anymore if Atlanta pulls off the upset tonight. And Cofield and I mentioned this earlier. By the way, I'm Jeff Parles. Just mentioned that, too. What's Baker Mayfield's longevity in this league? Baker Mayfield got hurt about 6 weeks ago in L.A., and since then has been as bad as anyone at the quarterback position in this league. And Tampa has gone from essentially, hey, they're going to be hosting a playoff game. Maybe they're a hard out in the postseason to, they're not going to make this thing. They're going to go 8-9 at best. So questions about Baker, questions moving forward about Todd Bowles' future. It's just a mess, an absolute mess down there in Tampa. By the way, and I'll just say this, on that game for Saturday, I think Carolina's going to beat them and everything will be rendered meaningless anyway with what happens tonight with Atlanta and if Tampa controls their own destiny or not on Saturday. But again, this is a bad offseason to be needing a head coach. I don't think this is not a good class of who's available. They're in bad shape. They're in bad shape all the way around. Back in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
I just want to throw this out there on the college football playoff. Just want to get this out there because I know I won't be here the next day. I know Kofi will be here, obviously, tomorrow. But this is, and this is goes for both the NFL and college at this point, and this is honestly the one good thing that has happened where potentially the sport of football as a whole, maybe the quality's not quite as good in both college or the NFL as it's been in the past, but the parity across the board makes this sport at a pro and college level as good as it's ever been. On the college end of things, of the 8 teams that remain, Indiana, Alabama, Oregon, Texas Tech, Ole Miss and Georgia, Miami and Ohio State, I think there is a genuine path for 7 of the 8 teams left in the field to win the college football playoff. The only one I would be floored if they won it is Ole Miss, because I think they're going to get destroyed by Georgia. And then on the NFL side of things, let's say the betting chalk prevails in the AFC North, okay? It doesn't matter what happens in the NFC South Championship game. So that would mean Baltimore beats Pittsburgh on Sunday. Of the 14 teams that would be in the postseason in that scenario, Denver, New England, Jacksonville, Baltimore, Houston, Buffalo, L.A. Chargers, and on the NFC side, Seattle, Chicago, Philadelphia, the NFC South champ, doesn't matter who, the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Green Bay Packers. I would say that 12 of the 14 in the NFL would be live to win the title. I don't think the NFC South champion has a shot, in the way the Packers are right now, I don't think they don't have a shot either. But we're completely in the camp at this point that this, in both college and the NFL, have never been more wide open than it currently is right now. Makes the sport great. Makes everything more entertaining when there's this many teams available in both college and the NFL with the potential to win the whole thing. We're back tomorrow on Cofield & Company. Come on down. We're having a party here at the front yard at Ellis Island. Giveaways, great food, great deals. Come on down, Ellis Island with Cofield & Company at the front yard.